8:09, joining me now in the studio with our Trails Report from Mountain Trails Foundation, Charlie Sturgis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what have we got going on?
Well, let's start with maybe events. How about that?
Sure.
So we do have the Salt Lake Running Company's Run U events are going to be in the Round Valley area this Saturday, tomorrow, starting at 8 o'clock. Should be probably out of there by 11 o'clock about. So you will see signage up there. You will see some aid station stuff out there today and some activity, putting up signs. These guys do a great job in their event. It's 15K. It's the third race in their series. So cheer them on. Mid-Mountain Marathon is a week away for Mountain Trails. This is the third leg of the Triple Trail Challenge. Super excited about it. This is the longest one and the hardest one. Deer Valley all the way over to UOP this year. So if you have people participating, a couple things to be aware of. We are going to be meeting at the Skull Candy parking lot at about 6 o'clock. You should be ready to get on a bus. This race starts an hour earlier than it had traditionally as of last year. We started at 7 o'clock, try to beat some of the heat that's associated with the end of the race. You can still register, and it's certainly easier to register now than it is to do it the day not the day of, but the night before. So you can just get online and go register. Quite honestly, Leslie, things are really pretty calm out there right now. We've had a bit of rain. The riding's excellent. The riding, running, hiking is excellent. Seems like the bugs are kind of gone. The flowers are still hanging in there up high in various places. And conditions are actually brilliant, kind of summer, and the heat's off. So I think today's report is somewhat benign in that respect. So have a great weekend. Enjoy it.
Okay, Charlie, thanks.
You bet.
8:14 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now on the phone with a monthly update of development in Summit County, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this Bonanza Flat jurisdictional stakeholders meeting happening in about 20 minutes. Summit County is one of those jurisdictional stakeholders. Is that something that's been put on your plate or somebody else handling this?
No, it hasn't been put on the planning department's plate to date. Right now, it remains a topic discussion with the county council. Could we be involved in some capacity in the future, perhaps? But right now, it's been pretty much county council to city council and some of the other stakeholders in the region.
Okay. Let's see. What's the latest on South Point? This is the project on the southernmost end of Promontory. It was recently before the Eastside Planning Commission for another review. Just a little bit of background on that. We're talking about an 800-acre piece of property, some 19,000 square feet of commercial, 350 hotel rooms, 735 residential units. We've got lakeside lots, a high school site, a helicopter plant. So where are we with this?
Originally, there was a planning commission public hearing in early June where the project was initially presented. There was obviously no decision made at that meeting. There was a desire for the planning commission, to go back into work session and have a more direct conversation amongst themselves and the applicant on that. That happened a couple of weeks later. At that work session, that was the general consensus of the commission that the amount of density and change that was being proposed, when weighed against the community benefits, those community benefits the commission felt were not sufficient for that type of increase. I may be paraphrasing somewhat, but I think Commissioner Clyde had made the comment that the amount being requested was a real, in his term, sort of wow, and the community benefits associated with that wow needed to be an equal wow. And so they had directed the applicant to go back and reconsider the proposal and also reconsider what it would involve in terms of bringing back some community benefits. We haven't been in meetings since then. However, staff does have a meeting scheduled with the applicant next week, and we're anticipating being presented with some revised proposals. We haven't seen them in advance, So we'll be sitting down with the applicant, reviewing that, and depending on the outcome of that meeting, likely be going back to the Planning Commission here in the near future, this late summer, early fall, for another round of discussions.
Yep. So is the east side under the same sort of regulations that the Snyderville Basin is, that being no increased density request unless there are compelling community benefits to allow for it?
No, they're not under that same general plan policy. What makes it interesting in this case is where South Point and Promontory are located. It's right on the border of both planning jurisdictions, so there are potential impacts to both the east side and the west side. And I want to be careful here. You know, impacts or consequences sometimes are positive, sometimes are negative. I think the commission is doing a really good job of recognizing the fact that they're administering a development code and a development agreement that exists on the east side district, but recognizing, too, that this could have implications on the west side. So I think they're being careful, and I think they're being deliberate in their decision-making. We'll wait and see what comes back. I'm going to try not to presuppose anything. So we'll gather that information and hopefully put it into a report for both the commission and the public so they can understand and move the discussion forward.
So this development needs the amendment, and basically they're asking to more than quadruple the previously approved density. So you're talking about you need some wow community benefits to even consider that. What would a wow community benefit look like?
Boy, at this point, I wouldn't want to begin to speculate. Certainly, what are some of the community needs? You know, the community needs are the same both east side and west side to a large degree. It's projects that help us solve the way we move about, sort of our transportation and our congestion problems. Certainly there's a growing need for affordable housing. Could that be part of it? In terms of open space, I don't think any of us forgotten about the need for open space here in the region. And it's more than just open space for the preservation of open space or creating buffers, that's always going to be important. But beginning to see open space as a way of connecting things, neighborhoods, communities, natural areas, that's going to be important. You know, you had mentioned when you're going through the list of the proposals, the school site for the South Summit School District, you know, perhaps that is one that we need to carefully look at and weigh. The growth on the South Summit side of the planning area is certainly, I mean, it's real. The South Summit School District master planning process has gone, I think, to some pretty extensive study to kind of chart where that growth is going to be coming from. And to no real surprise, the U.S. 40 corridor, the east side of 40 from Silver Summit, all the way down to the Quinns and Richardson side and sort of the growth in those areas, there's going to be more. So there's going to be need for facilities. Where's the best location for that? The district is studying that. The South Point team has stepped up and said, hey, you know, we're willing to propose a site. Is that an appropriate site? Again, premature at this point to make a hard and fast decision, but I think that's one of those elements of the discussion that are going to weigh in whether or not that's a viable benefit and what will ultimately be a package of benefits that they will bring forward.
So I think the Snyderville Basin Code requires developments to come in with, 20% of the units are affordable? Does the east side have?
Yeah, there's not an affordable housing, we do not have an inclusionary affordable housing requirement on the East Side Code as of yet.
All right. So if we were looking at this on the Snyderville Basin side of things, though, that would require 200 units as opposed to the 35 they're proposing, yeah?
Yeah. If we are just applying the Snyderville Basin Chapter 4 Workforce Housing Code to the project, that 20% would apply to something in this particular case. And again, I'm being careful. This project is an offspring of a development agreement, and those requirements for affordable housing are built into that development agreement. There is a requirement in the promontory development agreement for the provision of some employee housing. The discussion of additional, that would be part of this whole ultimate review and final council action on whether or not it should be changed or not.
And except an amendment opens things wide open, though, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely, it would. This because of the fact that there is a significant amount of additional development proposed, it's a fair point for discussion to talk about whether or not there should be additional affordable housing associated with it. Part of the discussion with the applicant has been that the type of residential product being proposed here, they've been using, I believe, the term attainable. It's going to be a market unit, but at a niche that's needed in the community. I don't believe that staff or the commission are there in agreement with them without some legitimate restriction on those units that address sort of the price point on those residences. So, again, I keep saying it, but a whole lot more discussion to come on this one. And we don't have a meeting scheduled. I'm anticipating that next meeting would probably be at some point in September.
All right. What's the latest on Whole Foods? Scheduled opening date at this point?
Yeah, I think they're still shooting for an early October opening. They're busy with the interior finish, what we call a tenant finish of the building right now. I think we're probably 4 to 6 weeks out. If people have been by the property lately, they can notice that there's a lot going on in terms of finishing up the store itself. I believe that some of the businesses in the satellite building, the smaller building to the west, are beginning to open. There's a small restaurant pizzeria that I think has just recently opened up its doors. I'm excited to let everybody know that the 20 affordable housing employee units that are on site, I've been told, have been filled, so we've got people in there. There'll be a e-bike station associated with that general area, so it's getting really close. And I think they're still on target for an early October opening. I was stumbling into the existing store yesterday morning, early before they opened. I didn't realize they were open. And there was a big staff meeting going on where they were discussing, you know, the future for the store. So I think we're probably about 4 to 6 weeks out on it. But I think they still consider that to be on schedule.
All right. The motocross track in Wanship, the property owner by court was required to put it back to how it used to be. Are we seeing that happen, or is it still mired in court?
Well, both. There's two things going on right now. There is still an aspect, an appeal procedure winding its way through the courts. There's also, as part of a cease and desist order that the county had issued to the property owner, that cease and desist order came with it, the requirement to revegetate. I believe that they are working on that revegetation, and that is being reviewed and monitored by the engineering department. The court part of it, I guess, kind of quickly to back up in the history, originally, about a year ago, the council in a split vote favored in behalf of the property owner, Mr. Luzak. There was an appeal to Third District Court by the neighbors. The Third District Court granted the appeal, overturning the council decision. At that point, when the county issued the cease and desist order, required the rehabilitation, the revegetation of the site, when that cease and desist order went out, there was a motion filed by attorneys for the property owner to intervene in that original third district court decision because they were not party to that at the time. And what's in front of the judge right now is that whole issue of their ability to now come back and intervene in that third district court decision. I'm not aware of a court date being set, but likely that will be in the near future as well.
Finally, just wanted to ask you, the Old Ranch Road issues that were brought up by neighbors to the Summit County Council on Wednesday. Council members hearing about lots of new farm animals and new buildings going up. So how do you even start to approach this?
What we told council we would do is here in the next couple of weeks, schedule a work session with them where we would attempt to frame the issues in a way that we could have a discussion that would end up with maybe some potential outcomes or some action items that we could take. And I think what I had proposed to council, what that would generally look like is allow staff to have the time here to put together a discussion paper. We could take a look at what state code addresses agricultural activities. And there's a number of exemptions under the state code for agricultural activities, obviously. From that state code, we would take a look at how locally under our zoning ordinances agriculture is regulated and what sort of exemptions are out there now as a result of our local codes. Take a look at what existing operations are going on in the area, what do they consist of, begin to identify the nature of some of the concerns or complaints, and then from that, maybe as a result of that discussion with council and the affected stakeholders, take a look at are there any available solutions, policies, ways of moving forward that we can help address that. Because I think, Leslie, what we're beginning to see is what happens when, you know, that interface between a growing residential population and when that begins to butt up against agriculture. And in fairness to the neighbors, I want to be fair to all sides, I don't think any of the neighbors were saying that grazing cattle or horses were necessarily the problem. It was what happens when there's more intensive agricultural activities and how do they address the and mitigate sort of the problems associated with, you know, the livestock aspect of this, not so much the growing of, you know, alfalfa or crops, but, you know, the more intensive use of things like, you know, poultry and swine and stuff like that. How do we address that? Right now in the code, agriculture in the Old Ranch Road area, which is zoned rural residential, is an allowed land use activity. There's no animal unit provisions established out there. It's just simply allowed. In terms of any potential nuisance, you know, smells or flies, those sorts of things are reviewed and monitored and regulated by the health department. Do we need to go beyond those existing regulations? Well, that's kind of what we want to have the discussion about. And I'm hopefully not going to get my exercise by leaping to conclusions, but what we want to do is first understand what the laws are regarding agriculture are, really have a good idea what these problems are, and then begin to make maybe some steps forward on how we address those. And I think probably time is ripe to have that discussion, and we hope to have that in front of council here shortly. I know on the 23rd, they have a big agenda, and then they'll be breaking to go for city tours. So if we can get it on the 23rd, we'd like to try and do that. But if not, as soon as they come back from Colorado, have that white paper completed so we could have that discussion.
Okay, Pat, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time. Talk to you next month. The Utah Olympic Park has added a new free shuttle service for patrons. On the phone with details, I have Cole Nordman. He's the marketing manager at the UOP. Good morning, Cole.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us how the shuttle works.
So the shuttle will run from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., 365 days a year. The only days it's not going to run is Thanksgiving and Christmas. So what the shuttle does is it goes down to the new shuttle center down at Kimball Junction, and it runs up to the park two times per hour. So every 30 minutes, essentially, that shuttle will run 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. every single day.
So why are you doing this?
It's just a way for us to get more people to the park. I think you see the trend moving towards more public transportation, especially in Park City. It's what people want, and we want to make sure to give them as many options to get to the park as possible. And the really nice part about our shuttle is that it's free. So anytime someone comes into the transit center and wants to get to the park, they can hop on the shuttle every 30 minutes and come right up.
So is there a parking shortage at the UOP that you've been experiencing?
No, I just think we've seen enough demand for other options to get to the park, especially with more people coming from the valley on the PC transit system and everything. So we just kind of follow those trends of the people, and they've really showed us that they want some more options to get up to the park without necessarily having to drive a vehicle.
Yeah, and what we're finding out, though, is that there's no parking there at the Kimball Junction Transit Center. So what are you telling people to go or just to, yeah.
Yeah, if they come in and, you know, they get on the transit center from another bus, they should be completely fine. If they want to drive their vehicle, they're more than welcome. We don't have a parking shortage up here during the summer. It's never really been an issue for us. We just want to give others that may not have that mode of transportation an option to get to the park.
Okay. So this is something that the UOP is paying for, huh? Or are you getting reimbursement from the county transit?
It was done all in conjunction with Summit County and the Park City Transit System. It's just to help us get a more consistent schedule and stop location, and it helps actually streamline the communication for that shuttle information so we can have it all in one place. It all happens at the same place every single day minus Thanksgiving and Christmas. So it just gives something for the people to rely on every single day.
Okay. So the stops, I mean, is it at on the hour and every half hour, or is it a different time?
It's on the hour and then every half hour, so essentially 00 and 30 minutes after the hour. So it should be there within at least a minute or two of those scheduled times.
Great. So what else is going on this summer?
So coming up next week, we have our final slip and soar of the season. That's our biggest event we've got coming up. And then at the end of September, we have the Red Bull 400 once again here at the park. So we see a lot of great numbers already on our online registration. So if you'd like to participate, we still have maybe 100 tickets left for slip and soar. We're getting down to the end of that ticketing right there. But I know there's plenty of spots left open for the Red Bull 400 at the end of September.
Okay, so tell me what the slip and soar is.
So slip and soar is we take our aerial freestyle ramps that go into the Spence Eccles freestyle pool, and we turn four of those ramps into giant slip and slides that you can glide down on your belly instead of on a pair of skis. So anyone, no matter your ability, as long as you're over 13 years old for this one, you can come and you can slide on our water ramps here.
Okay, what's the cost of that?
So it's $65, and it runs from noon to 6 p.m. on August 19th. So you get 6 hours of sliding, essentially, for that entire day. You can come in, you can slide, and you can have some fun. You can sit out on the terrace with your family and everything. There's no charge to watch, so if you want to come and have a good time and your friends don't necessarily want to participate, they can always come and watch for free.
Okay, and then the Red Bull 400, is this the climb up the ski jump?
Yes, so we take the outrun of the K120, and we put cargo netting down, and you run all the way up it, and you actually go up the in as well. So it's an insane race. We have some elite athletes from around the world that will be here, but any regular Joe off the street can come and test their mettle on our hill.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that everyone's running up the hill. I think they're dragging themselves up the hill.
Yeah. Yes, exactly, or a very, very slow bear crawl.
Okay, so the 400, is that the length that they crawl or run?
Yes, so it's 400 meters from top to bottom. So it's the world's steepest 400-meter race, essentially.
Wow, okay. Again, registration online for that as well.
Yeah, just go to redbull400.com, and you'll see the registration link there. I've heard that, you know, we've probably got half of our field already registered for this year, so spots are really going quick for that, and we expect it to be probably our biggest Red Bull 400 ever since it has come to the park.
Okay, and then just another, again, a heads up that the free shuttle service is underway, yeah? It's already started?
Yep, it's up and running, and it's going to run every single day.
And if somebody had a big group, how many do these vans hold?
So I believe we can get at least 10 in our shuttle. So if they have to come back and forth, they will. So they'll just go off of the demand. So if they see that extra people are waiting there, they'll make an extra trip down once they can.
Okay. Hey, Cole, thanks for your time this morning. It's 8:40. Well, the third annual Tour to Sunrise happens tomorrow morning as part of this year's Summit County Fair. On the phone with details, I have a member of the Sunrise Rotary Club that organizes the event, Jim Whitney. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So how does the tour work?
So the Tour to Sunrise, this is our third annual, and we meet out at in Colville, right by the fairgrounds, the Summit County Fairgrounds. And you registration starts at 8 a.m., and the ride will start at 9 a.m., and it's actually a walk, run, and ride. So you can run, you can walk, or you can ride your bike.
All right. How far are they walking, running, or riding?
What we do is so we leave and we go down on the Colville Main Street and then we get onto the rail trail. It's about 4 miles out and about 4 miles back. It's flat and really easy. It's a great ride for kids and families and everybody. And Echo Reservoir is full this year, so it's very pretty and you ride out along the shore. We've got three fun rest stops along the way themed with beach theme and music and grass skirts, and then all the way to the end of where you turn around, we'll have a Mexican theme with non-alcoholic pina coladas, but even along the way we have some adult beverages for those who care.
So is the trail paved or is it dirt?
It's dirt most of the way, like the rail trail, you know, once you get outside of town. But it's smooth, it's, you know, even and level, and it's a real easy little round trip.
Yeah, and not for a road bike, though. Just bring a mountain bike or a...
Best with a mountain bike or a cruiser. We actually every entry will be automatically entered in our opportunity, and there will be lots of fun prizes from different folks, Scott USA with some prizes, bike helmets, things like that. And then our grand prize will be a really sweet mountain or beach cruiser that we got to see yesterday at our Sunrise Rotary meeting. And it's a beauty. It's a great bike, good cruiser.
And the cost to register is how much?
So it's inexpensive, $10 per person and $25 for a group or family up to five. All the proceeds go to the Park City Sunrise Rotary, which is then put into our grants program, and it all goes back out in October to all the local Summit County, mostly nonprofits and great organizations that are doing things for the community, and we just grant it right back out.
All right. So how many people did you get last year?
Last year we had about 150. And it's really fun. I mean, that's a great group with all the rest stops along the way. And this year, you know, we have high hopes for. We'd like to double that. So really need to get out. It's really fun. It's such a ball. And then you come back. We're back at the fairgrounds, 11:30 noon. And then you have an opportunity to go to the county fair. We've had so much support from Travis English at the county with the fair. And you can go enjoy the carnival rides and the fun, you know, fair food and look at the sheep and the chickens. And I think at noon there's a livestock auction, which is really something to see if you've never seen a county fair livestock auction, which is really fun too. So it's a whole day and it's great. Really fun.
Yeah. So this isn't a race. You can turn around wherever you want to turn around. You don't have to ride all 4 miles. One way.
No, you don't need to. No, it's not a race. It's really a casual, fun, again, great for the kids. Just take your time, stop and chat with all the people at the different stops along the way. Enjoy the view of Echo Reservoir. You know, a lot of Park City people don't get out to Echo as often as they should, and it's really pretty out there.
Yeah. So is it all? Is there any pre-registration, or it's all done on-site tomorrow starting at 8?
You can register online. That's the best way to do it, summitcountyfair.org. And just go to the events tab. We're right there at the very top. Again, $10 per person or $25 for a group. There will be registration on-site day of in the morning. And, again, that registration opens at 8, and the ride will start at 9 a.m.
Okay, and then for people living maybe in the Park City area who are driving their bikes out, where do they park? Just at the fairgrounds? Is that the easiest?
Just go right to the fairgrounds. You just get off at that Colville exit and take a left onto Main Street and then a quick right. I think it's called Park Road. Just head for the fairgrounds. It will be real easy to find. We'll have banners out and signs and yeah.
Okay, Jim, hey, thanks for your time. Well, the Summit County Health Department will be sponsoring two community markets. In the studio with details, I have Health Department educator Serene Brooks. Good morning, Serene.
Good morning.
So why is the Health Department doing this?
Well, our main goal is we really would like to get some fresh produce in the hands of community members, and sometimes that's difficult to do. And so we have partnered with USU Extension, Summit Community Gardens, and with the Sheriff's Office. And we are going to put on this farmer's market, and it is truly just a farmer's market. We plan to just have fresh produce available, and along with some nutrition education. And with our first one on the August 15th, there's going to also be back-to-school immunizations available through the nursing staff there at the health department.
Okay. We already have two farmer's markets each week. This is, you're just thinking it's people are there at the health department anyway, just maybe a easier location for them to get to?
Part of that is the location and also the partnerships we've been able to develop in the community. And another benefit that we're going to offer is a EBT card reader for those who have SNAP benefits, so the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Currently, we'll be the only farmers market in Park City that has the ability to use an EBT card reader. And so we really hope that we can encourage those who have those benefits to come and use it on fresh produce, because that is a barrier for them. And for the first $10 that they spend, we were able to get a grant to give them back another $10 in what they call double up food bucks. So they can have another $10 to spend on this produce. And we feel like that's a real benefit for these recipients.
Okay. But it's open to everyone, yeah?
It is open to everybody. Uh-huh.
Okay. And the prices are just basically market prices at a farmer's market then?
Yes. Yep. There'll be market prices.
Okay. And in terms of the date, you had mentioned August 15th. The second one is in September sometime?
September 12th. And both of them will be from 9 till 1. And so it's just a short period of time. It's not going to be a huge farmer's market. This is our first year going with this, and we're really excited about it and hope to grow into something maybe a little bit bigger next year. Another component I want to mention is the Sheriff's Department. We've been able to partner with them, and the inmates actually have a garden that they grow. And so we've been able to go and provide education to the inmates on gardening and harvesting, planting, benefits of consuming fresh produce, and it's been a really great experience for all of us. And now they've grown a garden, they're going to be able to bring their produce and help sell it at the market as well.
Awesome. So what are they going to be selling?
They've got cherry tomatoes and zucchini and onions, peppers, things like that.
All right. The money just goes back into the garden program. It's not like they get to keep it, yeah?
Yeah, no, but we'll go back to help improve their garden in the future.
Okay. And again, this will be held just in the parking lot there, the health department?
It'll be right in the parking lot at the health department, which is on 650 Round Valley Drive. And we'll just block off a section of it so people can safely get in and out and be able to come and shop and get some education. And if they need their back-to-school shots, that's a great opportunity to do it as well. And so it'll be really a good opportunity, I think, for people to come and get some fresh produce.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Hey, Serene, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Parsonsfield, along with Lainey Jones and the Spirits and singer-songwriter Jeffrey Folcott, will be performing Saturday, August 12th as part of the Big Stars Bright Night series at the Deer Valley Amphitheater. On the phone with me is the lead man for Parsons Field, Chris Feeman. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, thanks. So,
good morning.
So is Parsons Field touring with the two other acts, or was this just kind of put together for this show here in Park City?
So this is a special special thing for just this one show. We have toured with Lainey Jones in the past, and we played a show or two with Jeffrey Foucault as well. But it'll be a nice. We're looking forward to our reunion with them for sure.
Great. So tell me a little bit about the band. You and your bandmates first apparently got together back in college.
Yeah, we were going to school in Connecticut, at the University of Connecticut, and there was a folk music club that one of our good friends started. And it was essentially a chance to get together each week and play old songs. And I wouldn't say it's indicative of the overall culture of the school in any way, but it was a way for us to skip the basketball games and have a good excuse for something to do. So, but it was the best part of our week, and it was eventually, this club was mistaken as a band, and we were asked to open a show at this place called Toad's Place in New Haven. It's a pretty legendary rock club, and we just didn't correct them, and we decided we would go and have folk music club on stage that night, and eventually it just sort of has snowballed into, touring the country.
Yeah, and full-time career then, huh?
Full-time, yeah.
Yeah. So if you would, talk a little bit about your sound. I mean, do you still consider yourself a folk music band?
Well, I would say we still consider ourselves a band that's rooted in that. But at the same time, we're never trying to, hold ourselves back from trying anything different. So we've certainly moved on a little bit. We have electric guitars, and we have a little pocket piano, it's called, which is a little analog synth. And we try and bring in other genres, because not everybody in the band was in that folk music club at the very beginning. And, limits us at all to that, but we just try and find all different sounds and not allow any genre to hold us back.
So the show on Saturday, is it all original music, or do you play covers of as well?
It's mostly original music. It's 90% original, and we did one album back in 2014 called After Party, which was sort of a covers album. And we did songs from really old songs by Mississippi John Hurt and Blind Willie McTell, these old blues songs, as well as some contemporary songs. Like there's a Huey Lewis song on this album. So it's a wide variety. We try and just take music from sources. When we do covers, we try and bring from any source and make them all sound like us. And same thing with our original songs. It's we try them in all different ways. We could have a song that winds up being a really quiet song with droning pump organ and kind of reverb out vocals and really dreamy. But before we came to that, we may have tried it where we're just going crazy and screaming and running around. And so there usually winds up feeling like a right and wrong way to find a song, but there's no right and wrong way to get there. We'll take any path.
Right, sure. So will y'all get back up on the stage, you, Lainey, and the Jeffrey, along with Parsons Field? Will there be anything
together? We probably should. We should do something all together, huh?
Yeah. And just really quick,
yeah.
The band's name comes, I read, from Parsons Field, Maine. So what's there? What's that about?
So we were up in, we recorded both of our full-length albums, at least parts of them, in this little farmhouse in Parsons Field, Maine. And we met our drummer up there. And it sort of just became this focal point for the band, where it's this little farmhouse studio that we really found our sound, and we kind of stopped thinking ourselves as that folk music band, and more just just any band, just a band that makes inspiring sounds to us. So that's sort of why we took that place where it sort of happened over the course of a week while we recorded our first record. And we just took it as a name and have continued with it.
Great. Well, again, showtime for Parsons Field along with Lainey Jones and singer-songwriter Jeffrey Folcolt will be Saturday, August 12th. Showtime 7 p.m. Doors open at 5:30. Tickets and more information available at echolcenter.org. Chris, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
And from their 2016 album, Blooming Through the Black, here's the song, Ready to Die.
Disguised in the clothes and loving eye, and even uncut flowers.